Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That'll cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Time for our parenting slot. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First question is this. I'm currently going through a very nasty separation for the last 2 years. To cut a very long story short, after many court dates, I've finally been given the access I was seeking. I have 4 kids, twin girls, who are 7, and 2 boys aged 5 and 3. The access I got was to have the 2 girls overnight on a Saturday and the 4 of them all day Sunday. Same with the boys the following week. The boys love their sleepover, but one of my girls has become very anxious. She's very reluctant to leave her mother. But when we get to my house, she relaxes, but then gets anxious again prior to bed. This access began 2 months ago. It has now got to the stage where she was brought to a GP a few days ago because she has started to wet the bed, has a raised pulse when sleepover is mentioned by her siblings, and gets very stressed when it's brought up. I have consulted with my solicitor and was told that I can insist that she comes to my house, but I don't want to do this, and I am concerned that this might get worse. My relationship with the mother is terrible and we barely speak. Have you any suggestions? What is the best way to approach this?
I mean, I have suggestions about what the best way is, and then I have suggestions about what the realistic way is, you know. And yes, unfortunately, those two things are not always aligned, and not in this case, because, of course, the best thing would be to improve the communication and relationship with your ex-partner so that the children experience their parents as co-parents working collaboratively.
Yeah.
So there's my kind of, albeit idealistic, best case scenario. In this situation, I'm hearing that this has been a really long, difficult 2 years, but for everyone involved, not just the adults.
Yeah.
And I think with the best will in the world, we adults like to think we can protect and shield our young children from these adult tensions and what's going on. But in my work, I actually end up speaking to the children very often, and they can tell me in minute detail,
of course,
what's been going on. They are little sponges, particularly as what it sounds in this case, you have an emotionally sensitive child who is more susceptible to picking up on tensions and stress that are not hers. But at the age of 7, children can't filter between what's my worry and what's your worry. They just feel the worry. Mm. So if it's not your worry, you can't process it. So that can result in a little sensitive child becoming saturated. Like, you think of it like a wet sponge that you almost need to pick up and wring her out so that she can keep functioning and take in more. So she's letting you know in her language, which is her behaviour, that she's struggling with this and that this is not meeting her needs. Of course, your solicitor is legally, unemotionally, objectively correct.
Yeah.
But parenting is none of those things.
Yeah, but I get the sense that this dad here doesn't want to do that.
And I think you're absolutely right. I'd commend you on that. I would not force her, but I would tell her that you would love her to do so when she feels ready, that you're not going to force her, but you love when she sleeps over. And when she feels ready for that, you'll be really excited about it. I would also think that you could focus on the part of access that's going well. Like you say, when she gets to your house, she relaxes. So you could really maximize that time and keep your relationship healthy and open and positive with the time you do have with her. You could do something if you know, as she's getting more used to this arrangement. It's still only 2 months. It is quite new. You plan a movie and snack session. So it's not bedtime, but there's a bit of a ritual coming up to it.
Yeah.
But I'd most of all give her time and don't pressure her and let her know that you know she's struggling and you're not upset with her and she's not hurting your feelings and she's not in charge of making sure you don't get hurt. You know, because children will often say, but I don't want daddy to be upset if I don't want to sleep over.
Yeah.
So let her know that's not her job.
Of
course it is. And children, you know, they just want everybody to be happy and to get along. So I think if you can communicate that to her, of course you've got to communicate that to her mum because she's 7. So her mum needs to be on the same page. But I think if that can't be done directly, if you could access through a mediator or some way of communicating that you are not changing the court-ordered access arrangement, but until your child is ready and until her anxiety symptoms have dissipated, you're prepared to modify it to meet her needs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny though, isn't it? Because they're twin girls, mm-hmm. one, I assume, doesn't have a
seems
problem with
fine.
It.
Seems to be fine.
Seems to be fine. And the other one is really stressed about it.
It just shows how different children are, though, you know. And
then,
there's one out of four children who's struggling with an arrangement the other three have no problem with.
Yeah.
So it's not the arrangement that's the problem. It's not going to dad's house that's the problem. It's none of that. It's this little girl's processing of what's happening. And she just may need more time emotionally to be with her mum a little bit longer. Often as well, and I'm not saying in this case because there's no inference about it, but it's not unusual for some children to worry about if we're all with you, who's with mum. Now, I do think this seems to be week on, week off with the overnight, that the boys are one week and the girls are the other. So mum, I assume, is not on her own, because children do worry about that. And they think, well, you go to dad and I'll stay with mum and everyone will be fine. Children take on a lot of responsibility, and it is incumbent on us to alleviate that pressure from them.
Yeah. You'd think that she would, for the little girl, she has her sister, who's probably, because she's a twin sister, so she's very close to her. And she has that automatic support with her when she's sleeping over.
I know, you would think, and I'm sure that was the plan here. And that's why, you know, when she was struggling the last 2 months, I think you were right to give it a go. I wouldn't have stopped it any sooner than this. I would have said, I'll give it a go. It might settle. But it's escalating if she's bedwetting.
In these scenarios, though, where it's a marital breakup and the as he says, the relations are terrible.
Yeah.
And the adults can use kids against each other. And, you know, there might, I kind of get a sense in this that one thing he might be worried about is that, she won't go to his house because he's horrible or whatever.
Yeah.
Or she's going to try and somehow.
Well, he would have a right to talk to the GP.
To change the arrangement.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And while we'd all like to think that's not the case and that wouldn't happen. You know, again, it's my kind of idealistic and my real world, you know, mentalities clashing there. If that was a consideration, you could ask to speak with the GP and do it from a position of concern, not suspicion.
Yes.
And I think that's really important.
Yeah. And say what to the GP?
Just that you're this child's father and that you're aware that coming for access, it may be a trigger for some anxiety symptoms, and you'd like to understand that better. And what's the GP's opinion, and what might the GP recommend, so that both parents can be responding to her in a calm, consistent way?
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe write the mother an email worded as neutrally as you possibly can.
I'd write that email a couple of times before you hit send. That's always a good idea when there is acrimonious relations.
Yeah. Right. Next question is, my 18-year-old is about to start college in September and she will be in student accommodation with people she doesn't know, as none of her friends are bunking with her. She's not the tidiest and has a tendency to be quite abrupt in her manner, sometimes to the point of offence, but it's all unintentional. I'm worried she won't get on with her housemates and she'll be miserable. We live in Cork and she's going to be in Dublin, so she won't have her family around her. I want her to be herself, but not 100% herself. I don't know how to prepare her without upsetting her. Any suggestions?
Should any of us ever be 100% ourselves? I think that's actually a really good question. First of all, congratulations to your daughter on getting into college and to you on securing accommodation in Dublin, which is no mean feat these days. Mm. So I think, all you can do is let her go. Let her do this. And this will be a really good learning experience for her one way or another, because she's going to learn how other people experience her and to modify accordingly. Like, one of the things that we all do in terms of human relations and how we communicate is we develop a capacity of reflective functioning and mentalization, which basically means that I can read how you might be experiencing what I'm saying. And that gives me an option to continue as I'm doing or change what I'm doing to elicit a different response. Children generally develop that capacity, you know, by the age of 7. And it's done through play stages and things like that. But if you're concerned your daughter maybe didn't nail that. So one of the things you could do is talk to her now. Don't lecture her. Don't say, don't be yourself. Don't do. Don't go down that road at all. But talk generally about how sharing and how everyone needs to compromise a little for it to work, that house sharing is so different from living at home. Everybody's coming from different points of view, perspectives, and their own home experiences. And it takes give and take to work. Talk very generally, almost put it on that your housemates might be difficult and you're going to have to manage them rather than they might experience you as difficult. I think that's a more palatable approach for an 18-year-old from their parents. And also maybe take some time to wonder with her how she feels about meeting new people, because maybe some of, you know, you're perceiving she might be experienced as difficult or sometimes offensive. Maybe that's coming from a place that actually meeting new people and developing new relationships is a challenge, and she's getting defensive as a means managing her own anxiety around that. I'm only saying maybe because I don't know.
But it says she has friends. So she has succeeded in,
exactly,
in getting past that.
So it's about new relationships.
Yeah.
And I think, look, letting your 18-year-old go, move away from home, live independently or at least semi-independently and move into this new phase of young adult living is a big transition for parents as well. So take a breath, trust the job you've done. You've equipped her to get this far. You've equipped her for this next phase in her development, and keep the line of communication open so that if it's not working out or if she is having difficulties, she can come to you without thinking you're going to be, I knew this, I told you so.
Yeah,
I called it. Mm. You know, you need to keep it so that you can go, oh gosh, really? I'm sorry to hear that. What can we do about it?
Mm. But she's 18, moving in with, I assume, another load of other 18-year-olds. I don't think the untidiness is going to be an issue.
I didn't want to go there, but I agree with you. Yeah, I don't want to go infer any of that. But yeah, I think that's highly likely.
It'll be more like a competition.
Yeah.
My 7-month-old daughter hasn't laughed or even giggled yet. We have been doing all we can to make her laugh. Noises, songs, tickles, faces, everything. We have been assured that all is okay, but I'm desperate to hear her laugh. What can I do?
Yeah, I mean, this is quite a common question because, you know, we do follow these guidelines around what they should be doing at this stage and that stage and the other stage. And, you know, I mean, we all know that those first early smiles you get from a baby are reflexive smiles. They're not even responsive until they're 8 weeks old. They're certainly not social smiles until they're 3 months old. But anyone who has a 0 to 6 week old will claim that little wind smile as a connection because we're wired to do so. I mean, really the indiscriminate smiling, selective smiling and a full-blown, what we would understand as sense of humour, that's not in there until they're about 12 months. And those are very, very general guidelines, like very general. So if you've been assured all is okay, my only question on that is, from whom did you get that assurance? Was that from family members or well-meaning friends to reassure you? Or was that a public health nurse, your GP or a professional who said developmentally everything's okay? If you haven't had that reassurance from a medical professional and you're worried, which you do sound like you are, consult with a pediatrician or contact your public health nurse and have a checkup. You know, you're going to be due a medical officer checkup around 10 months-ish anyway. So that is coming up. So long as she is smiling, babbling, communicating in whatever way, and that can be flailing their little hands to get your attention as well. That's a communication. Crying is a communication at that age. Then she's most likely fine. But I totally understand when you're the parent of an infant, reassurance is everything.
Especially if it's a first baby and, you know, other people have their first baby and it's like baby Olympics, like mine's playing
the piano.
Baby
Olympics is such a good term. Or if you have another child who might only be a couple of years older and you're using them as the barometer. But my first child did this at this age, and the children are different and they develop at different rates. The guidelines that are out there are exactly that. They're guidelines.
Yeah. My 3.5-year-old tells my sisters and her granny everything. She tells him if Mammy and Daddy had a fight, if Mammy had a drink of wine, if Mammy was late to collect her. I can't get away with anything, and it seems only to be the bad stuff. I hate people knowing my business, especially my mother. How can I get her to be more private and some things to be our secret?
Oh, God. I mean, so you can't, and nor should you try. First of all, I'm going to urge you to be cautious about introducing the word secret into things because it's so loaded. And while you might solve one problem, all she's going to do is say to Granny, I can't tell you that because Mommy said it's a secret. And now you've created a whole other kind of tension. So I'm going to start with the positive on this one. I think that there are huge benefits for you that your family are so involved in your daughter's life and she has such good relations. Use that to your benefit. That is a real help. Lots of people don't have that at their disposal. I also think that it's going to be really good for your daughter to have that close relationship with Granny. Now, the thing I'm going to project and infer here is, more than your daughter saying it, what is the reaction she's getting when she says it? Like, are your sisters and mother howling with laughter when she tells them these things? Are they saying, go on, tell Auntie so-and-so what you told me. What does mommy do? What do, tell us all about, are they enjoying it? In which case, she's getting a feedback that's, this is hilarious, give us more of that. Mm. And then you're saying, no, don't do it. I think if you're really this uncomfortable and you do say, especially my mother, I think you need to own that that's your issue, yeah, not your daughter's.
That is,
You need to sit, the adults are better off sitting down and working this out. Don't say secret, but also at 3.5, you will not land that message on your daughter. She is not going to get you saying it's best that you don't share things that go on in our home with your granny, aunt, uncle, whoever. They're not going to get that because under the age of 4, cause and effect isn't really developed properly. And even after that, you're only telling her that this is a really big deal that gets very big reactions. She's going to keep doing it. So I think deal with it yourself from the inside out. Address it with the adults in question and focus on the benefits of the relationship for both of you.
Yeah. I'm going on a limb here, but I'd say it's not the first time that a woman has baby and then her mother pulls on her big judgy pants and tells her everything she did was much better.
Completely. And, you know, the role of grandparenting is so valuable to children in terms of attachment. And sometimes you've just got to dip yourself in just enough Teflon to let that stuff slide off for the bigger picture. So unless this is about something much deeper, in which case you still need to deal with it yourself as adults, I'm going to say smile and nod and go, aren't kids gas?
Yeah. Right, we have to take a break. After that, we have a 4-year-old who's worried about death. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. Joanna Fortune still with us. Couple of comments on some of the questions we've talked about already. We did get that question in, the first question from a separated dad, and one of his twin girls is a bit nervous about sleeping over. Is 7 not too young to understand what's actually happening? Maybe she needs to be sat down and allowed to ask questions about the separation. Maybe she is misunderstanding what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, that's entirely possible. But 7-year-olds often do better without having to process that at that very cognitive left brain verbal way. But she might benefit from a process that would enable her to use a different language and play it out, play it through. I don't know if those children have ever seen a professional, but it sounds like it's been a rough 2 years for everyone. Yeah. And maybe everybody could do with some space to heal from it. Mm. But absolutely, that's possible. Yeah.
Someone else says, shame on both those parents. I am part of a blended family. I know firsthand how hard it is to navigate adult feelings when trying to do parenting after separation and Ireland's horrendous divorce length laws. The parents need to kick up the arse to put the kids first. Why was that father not included in the GP visit? Mediation and family counselling is needed. The poor things. Yeah, well, at the same time, try not to be too harsh on them. I mean, the father may not have been told about the GP visit, might not have learned about it until afterwards, and that's part of the difficulties there. Meg says, on the question of the college student, the 18-year-old who's off to Dublin to college for the first time, is this not the time of her life when she will learn who she is? If she is abrupt and offensive, as said, then she will see how people she doesn't know react to her. That will help her to learn and grow and correct her behaviour. You can't wrap them up all their lives, which is true.
Pretty much what we were saying, absolutely.
Yeah, but at the same time, you want to make that learning process as pain-free as possible. Now, all our kids left home to go to university. My advice was listen and keep strong opinions to yourself until you understand the environment you are in, says John, which is excellent advice.
Absolutely agree.
And Mick and Connemara says, we have 6-month-old twins and it's amazing how differently they are developing. It really proves that you can't compare babies. They will develop at their own pace, says Mick. Now, next question is, I need your advice. I have a 4-year-old little girl. She's an only child. She is a happy and content little girl. However, over the past 2 weeks, she's become so distressed and worried about death. She will ask me every few minutes what might kill her. For example, Mammy, I touched the car. Will I die? Mammy, if you get dust in your mouth, will you die? If you get paint in your nose, your mouth or your ear, will you die? Or if you smell pasta, will you die? It can be almost anything which can cause her to ask these questions. I've tried everything to reassure her. I'm at my wit's end. I've tried to comfort her, explain to her how people die, how I and others will help her if anything happens, explain doctors, nurses, etc. Despite this, the questions are constant and it has caused me to lose my patience. What can I do? How can I reassure her that she will be all right?
I mean, you know, at this age, it is so utterly normal, even if it's challenging and unpleasant, but so normal to for children to ask about death. Like, they genuinely don't understand the permanence of death or the function of death in the circle of life until they're, you know, 5, 6, 7, even 8 years old. And until then, all you can do is answer the questions that she's asking. So I'm picking up you're getting frustrated, that you want to reassure her, you're at your wit's end. And this is not a comfortable conversation for most of us. Mm. And it may be that you're not comfortable having this conversation. I'm going to suggest you simply answer the questions she's asking as she asks. So when she says, "Mommy, I touched the car, will I die?" No, of course not. Nobody dies from touching a car.
Yeah.
That's the end of that discussion. Mm. And then when will you, from pasta, no, smell of pasta is lovely. Why don't we put a sauce in it? What would you like to smell now? Oh, what does it smell like? And just move her on, but don't get into a whole philosophical debate about it, because that's what's going to frustrate you, because at the moment, that's not where her head is at. I would ask if anyone has died or if anyone is sick or has she been exposed to something like that, because she may be trying to work out why one person would die and why another wouldn't. So what's behind these questions might be a fear, in which case that's what you would respond to, not the question, but the fear. Mm. I'm wondering why you're asking me that. I wonder what you think.
Yeah. At the same time, also, now, obviously, because it's a big, scary subject, four-year-olds are interested in all sorts of stuff and take random interests and things. And that just, I'm interested in death at the moment, but next week it could be shoes.
And it's at this age, it's a classic age for these questions to emerge, because, you know, understanding that people can cease to be is quite a mind-blowing concept.
It is at any age.
At any age. And you've got to ask tons and tons of questions to understand that, because that's how children learn. But it is really important to stay in the question she's asking and don't say, "Oh, this is the death talk. I've been waiting for this." Let's sit them down and have tons and tons of information about death and whatever afterlife you do or don't believe in, or whatever philosophy or religion belief you have around it. They're not asking you that. Don't answer that. Only answer what you're asked, because it lets them know that you're comfortable with questions and they'll come to you as the questions advance.
Now, next week, just to let the listeners know, Joanna, is it your first?
It is my first. Yeah.
She'll be a first time author this time next week. Her book is called 15 Minute Parenting, The Quick and Easy Way to Connect with Your Child. First off, does the world need another parenting book, Joanna?
I mean, I'm obviously going to tell you the world needs this parenting book, Sean. But I'd like to think it's not a parenting book in the classic, as we understand parenting books. This is really about children and about taking a therapeutic parenting approach, if for want of a better term. But basically what I'm sharing are some of the techniques we use as therapists that you don't need to be a therapist to do. It's about using play as a language to connect with your child, because that's their language. I've said that often when we've been talking, but it's really about accessing what gets activated in us when our children do and say things, and how is that influencing what we do. So I'm talking about how, you know, people are already busy, and, you know, in a full disclaimer here, I am not asking you to add anything into your busy days. It's really about changing some of what you're doing to build in 15 minutes of mindful play every day.
Yeah. And it's not that you only have to spend 15 minutes a day with your children, which would be great.
Oh my God, if I could develop that system, never work another day in my life.
Cash money there. Yeah. But it is because it struck me that the book is really about, could just as easily be called, How to Play with Your Children.
Yes.
That's really all it's, you know, I'm not trying to simplify your book too much.
No, please do. I agree with that. And that's what I want, is that, you know, it is about that we often are expecting our children to relate to us in a very adult way, when of course they can't do that. But the one thing we all have is that we've all been children.
Mm.
And so it's about reaccessing that part of ourselves that knows that part of our children and connecting at that level.
Well, that's interesting, because you do have, you know this, but I'm only saying this so the listeners know, but there is a section where you talk about that adults have to learn how to play again, which is probably the most difficult part of it.
I think that's the biggest challenge, because we're so up in our heads, and our whole lives and the way we interact and engage tends to be very up in our heads, cognitive interaction. And the idea of sitting down and playing cars or building bricks or blowing bubbles feels like, oh no, I'd feel a bit silly doing that. And basically, this is a book about saying, embrace the silly.
Yeah.
Absolutely embrace it, because the benefits, not only to your child, which we can talk and talk about, the benefits to us as adults and in our parenting is exponential if we can do that, and if we can teach that to our children.
You're also not a mad fan Well, I don't know if you have anything against them, but play dates, you kind of seem to feel are kind of unnecessary.
I think they're a modern parenting phenomenon. So I'm not against them, but I'm not somebody who advocates children need them. They don't, would be what I'd say. They might want them. You might want them. They might work for you, in which case, great. But I so often in my day-to-day work hear from parents going, oh, the play dates are such a hassle. You don't need to do those. There's a whole politics that has emerged around play and about parents getting really involved in play. But I also think there are exceptions. I also think that sometimes play dates are just babysitting in disguise. And, you know, that's okay, but call it what it is. Because if it's a genuine play date, really 60 minutes is the max your children will cope with before somebody takes somebody's car and somebody's bickering and somebody's over it. And you want it to be a positive experience. But also, it simply doesn't suit every household to host a play date. And you do feel, if your child is invited on one, that it's incumbent on you
it's
to reciprocate.
It's like having dinner parties.
Yes,
yeah.
It's so like that. But my point is, do them if it works for you, but don't feel that your child needs them. They don't.
Yeah, but if they're like three or four or something, parents might think, well, they have to go, we have to socialize them as much
but
as possible.
But children are social beings, you know, very ornately. Like, I think some parents feel if they have a single child, it might be good. And there are some benefits to that. But also at around three or four, they're in preschool and they're socializing with children
anyway,
for at least 2-3 hours a day every day. And that is enough. But again, if you want to do them, but please don't be putting yourself under this immense pressure that you must be hosting everyone else's children.
There you go. Joanna's made your life easier already. The book is called 50-Minute Parenting, The Quick and Easy Way to Connect with Your Child. That'll be available in all good and not so good bookshops from next week. We're going to take a break. After that, a history of serial killers.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.